Chapter 5. We were so hungry that it hurt to drink water and we felt cramps in our guts. It was as though something were eating the insides of our stomachs. Our lips became parched and our joints weakened and ached. I began to feel my ribs when I touched my sides. We didn't know where else to get food. The one cassava farm that we ravaged didn't last long. Birds and animals such as rabbits were nowhere to be seen. We became irritable and sat apart from each other, as if sitting together made us hungrier. One evening, we actually chased a little boy who was eating two boiled ears of corn by himself. He was about 5 years old and was enjoying the corn that he held in both hands, taking turns biting each ear. We didn't say a word or even look at each other. Rather, we rushed on the boy at the same time, and before he knew what was happening, we had taken the corn from him. We shared it among the six of us and ate our little portions while the boy cried and ran to his parents. The boy's parents didn't confront us about the incident. I guess they knew that six boys would jump on their son for 2 ears of corn only if they were desperately hungry. Later in the evening, the boy's mother gave each of us an ear of corn. I felt guilty about it for a few minutes, but in our position, there wasn't much time for remorse. I don't know the name of the village that we were in and didn't bother to ask, since I was busy trying to survive the everyday obstacles. We didn't know the names of other towns and villages and how to get there. So hunger drove us back to Matrujong again. It was dangerous, but hunger made us not care that much. It was summertime, the dry season, and the grassland had grown yellowish. A fresh green forest engulfed it. We were in the middle of the grassland walking in single file, our shirts on our shoulders or heads, when suddenly 3 rebels rose from behind the dry grasses and pointed their guns at Jabrila, who was in the front. They cocked their guns, and one of them placed the muzzle of his gun under Jabrila's chin. "He is scared like a soaked monkey," the rebel laughingly told his companions. As the other two walked past me, I avoided eye contact by putting my head down. The younger rebel raised my head with his bayonet, still in its scabbard. While he was looking at me sternly, he took the bayonet from its scabbard and attached it at the muzzle of his gun. I trembled so hard that my lips shook. He smiled without emotion. The rebels, none of whom were older than 21, started walking us back to a village we had passed. One was dressed in a sleeveless army shirt and jeans, his head tied with a red cloth. The other two were dressed in jean jackets and pants, wearing baseball hats backwards and new Adidas sneakers. All 3 wore a lot of fancy watches on both wrists. All these things had been taken from people by force or looted from houses and shops. The rebels said a lot of things as we walked. Whatever they said didn't sound friendly. I couldn't hear their words because all I could think about was death. I struggled to avoid fainting. As we approached the village, 2 of the rebels ran ahead. 6 of us and 1 rebel, I thought to myself. But he had a semi-automatic machine gun and a long belt of bullets wrapped around him. He made us walk in 2 lines of 3 with our hands on our heads. He was behind us aiming his gun at our heads. And at some point he said, "If any of you makes a move, I will kill everyone. So don't even breathe too hard or it might be your last." He laughed and his voice echoed in the distant forest. I prayed that my friends and brother wouldn't make any sudden moves or even try to scratch an itch. The back of my head was getting warm, as if expecting a bullet any time. When we got to the village, the 2 rebels who had run ahead had gathered everyone who was there. There were over 15 people, mostly young boys, some girls, and a few adults. They made us all stand in the compound of a house that was closer to the bush. It was getting dark. The rebels took out their big flashlights and placed them on top of the rice-pounding mortars so that they could see everyone. While we stood there under gunpoint, an old man who had escaped from Matrujong was heard crossing a creaky wooden bridge leading to the village. While we watched, the youngest rebel walked toward the old man and waited for him at the foot of the bridge. He was placed at gunpoint as soon as he crossed over and brought in front of us. The man was probably in his 60s, but looked weak. His face was wrinkled from hunger and fear. The rebel pushed the old man to the ground, put a gun to his head, and ordered him to get up.